Welcome back to the show. We're talking to Jonah Goldberg, nationally syndicated columnist, National Review editor-at-large, author of Liberal Fascism, which I cite all the time, and Tyranny of Clichés. When Reagan claimed not have knowledge of what was going on in his administration, he was a boob. He was incompetent. We know people in the White House knew about what was going on, and the president didn't. That either makes him willingly incompetent or a boob by proxy, in my opinion.
But I think that's basically right. Or, it shows you how, this guy has been believing his own press releases for so long, and so have all the people around him. I mean, you do hear from people, from liberals who follow this White House closely and who know a lot of the players, as you can imagine, my sources in the White House are not awesome, that the staffers, they try very, very hard to protect Obama, and they don't want to tell him things that he doesn't want to hear. They don't want to say anything or act on any assumptions that he is not the greatest president ever. And I think that there's a major groupthink bubble problem going on over there that, even if their story is true, is that they didn't tell Obama because they wanted to keep him apart from all of this, that's damning in and of itself.
Well, we've got the common argument that, well, used to be common, the Doris Kearns Goodwin sort of theory in her book on Lincoln, that Obama had assembled a team of rivals. But there doesn't seem to be anybody in his inner circle that is willing to tell him anything contrary to not only what he believes, but what he wants to hear. And that is probably the most dangerous thing happening in this White House, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I think that there's a, it's sort of like a, the thing I keep thinking, going back to, is the Dan Rather Memogate story, which, as your listeners probably remember, that's when Dan Rather climbed up the jackass tree and then hit every branch as he fell back down.
Well, he's back on his way up now.
But the thing that created the problems for Dan Rather and for CBS News with all that, basically all stemmed from the fact that nobody in the room, there was nobody in the room who didn't want the story to be true. So there was no skepticism. There's no check on things. There's no one saying, hey, maybe we shouldn't be doing things this way. And this IRS thing, the idea that somehow that ideology had nothing to do with it is ludicrous. I mean, you would know that if the red flag for these things was progressives or women or civil rights or any of those kinds of terms, you know that the entire machinery of government would have said, are you guys crazy? You know that the White House would have listened to senators who said, look, we've got constituents saying that they're being persecuted by the IRS. And if those kinds of things came from Chuck Schumer about progressive groups being persecuted, you know that the White House would say, we're going to get to the bottom of it this week. And instead, they would just sort of roll their eyes. Of course, the Tea Partiers are paranoid. Of course, the Tea Partiers don't care. And this whole administration has been running on this sort of, we all know we're right, and any information that contradicts what we believe is illegitimate on its face. And I think that's the source of so many of their problems. As Obama once said in 2008, he really believes his own BS.
He really does. Now I want to shift gears a little bit, just really quickly here at the end, about the seizure of Associated Press phone records, the looking into James Rosen at Fox News, his phone records, including his parents' phone records. You're not the biggest proponent of journalist shield laws, but there has to be a line somewhere, does there not?
Yeah, look, I mean, the old understanding was that, observed by, Republicans and Democrats alike, was that while you don't, while journalists don't have a special right to keep secrets under the First Amendment, we should sort of operate as if they do, unless it's absolutely necessary to really pry into their sources and all of that. We should sort of give them a wide berth and a lot of deference. And I believe that I support that as a matter of policy. I think that makes sense. Is that I don't believe that journalists are a special guild class and that they have special rights. The First Amendment is my amendment, and it's my plumber's amendment too. We all have the right to commit journalism. but at the same time, you know, you got to have some sort of, you got to be a little, you know, practical about these things and understand that there are people called professional journalists, and they're the ones who are basically carrying the banner of our First Amendment rights for the most part, and you got to give them some slack. And that doesn't mean that you can't go after them, but you should always do it as a last resort, and you should always do it as narrowly as possible. And what this Justice Department has done, in large part because they've gotten nothing but attaboys and support from the press, is they have turned that on its head, and they think they can just throw out the gill nets and try to dredge up whatever they can find, and I think that's outrageous, and it's incredibly hypocritical.
We also have Sergeant Schultz running the Department of Justice, who apparently walks in at 8:30 in the morning and looks at his calendar, and the first thing to do is recuse himself from everything. So the captain of the ship has no idea what's going on. Captain Steubing doesn't know what Gopher's up to.
Yeah, he also seems to be recusing himself retroactively.
Yeah.
Normally, when you recuse yourself, you put it on paper somewhere. You know, you put a little letter in your file saying, I'm going to have nothing to do with this. He can't really answer when he recused himself or why he recused himself. He just sort of says it, which is kind of cool. It's like, you know, you cheat on your wife, and then you can sort of retroactively just say, look, I recuse myself from, you know, all of this. I mean, it's bizarre.
I wouldn't recommend that to anybody listening. Last question, Jonah, since it is your Twitter avatar, and you tweet about him all the time, tell me about Cosmo, your dog. What kind of dog is he? How old is he? How long have you had him?
Cosmo is a rich ethnic cocktail. He is
celebrate diversity, dogversity.
He is supposed to be half lab, half cattle dog, but we have no idea. I mean, some people think he's husky, some people think he's this, some people think he's that.
People shouldn't judge his weight. I don't think
he's 12 years old. He's in really terrible shape. It breaks our heart. He's about one more surgery shy of becoming fully bionic, and he's a cranky, cranky old man. His hearing is going. His eyesight isn't great. His joints are a mess. But we love him terribly, and we're just we're a little cross with this whole Dana Perino thing about her dog being America's dog. Cosmo has been the it dog of the American right for over a decade.
He definitely rocks a birthday party hat better than any dog I've ever seen.
He does, and you know, and Jasper's a Hungarian royalty.
Yeah.
He's a Vizsla. Cosmo's a mutt.
The 1%er dog over there at Dana Perino. Well, yeah, I have animals. I love them, and I know that you love your dog, so I just wanted to find out about him, because I knew that it was not a good time for Cosmo. I appreciate that insight into your dog and the insight into your head, Jonah Goldberg.
Thanks, Derek. Always good to be here, man.
Right now, it is that time yet again. It is time for a look at the roads.